The Legally Brief podcast is produced by the law offices of Judy Saunders. Legally Brief is a biweekly show that offers opinions and conversations with experts on why abuse exists, what the law is doing about it, and ways survivors can reclaim their lives. If you stop right this second to rate and review this show on iTunes or your listening platform, you will do your part in spreading Legally Brief's mission of creating a world where children can play, gather, and learn free of abuse from authority figures and institutions. And now your host, Judy Saunders.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Legally Brief podcast. I'm your host, Judy Saunders. Thank you so much for joining me. Today, I was on the Peloton bicycle, the exercise bicycle, looking for, of course, some exercise and inspiration. I was trying to sort out some thoughts and how to bring the most valuable information, the best information I could share with my listeners on the topic that we're discussing this month, the whole idea of fear. This being October, the month that a lot of the world celebrates Halloween, celebrates things that are scary. And I thought that it would be appropriate, of course, to tackle this issue and how fear impacts the lives of survivors of sexual, physical, and emotional abuse. So, while I was on the bike, I was listening to a podcast, and the podcast was discussing the different ways that fear had showed up in the life of that host. And I began to think about the way that fear is taught, the way it's so embedded and ingrained, and the way that it shows up in the lives of the individuals that I help and also in my life, whether it be in individuals that call the office, call looking for help. I wanted to share with you some of those patterns, some of those thoughts, in hopes that there is something that can be taken away and used in our own lives and in the corner of our world to bring about the vision in the world that we can stop, we can slow the growth and the continued injuries that are done to children, done to adults, and so that we no longer have to live in a world where we're talking about survivors of sexual, physical, and emotional abuse. So we know that fear can cause a person to follow others, to follow what we think others want us to do, to please others, to be so far removed from ourselves that we suffer in so many ways externally and internally. We become so far removed that we have those injuries both inside and out. But then we come to a point in our lives that we know that this is in fact something. We might not call it fear. We know it's pain. We know that we don't want to live like this anymore. And this can happen in childhood. It can happen in teens to a teen. It can also happen when you are quote unquote an adult. And you come to that realization that this is painful. Some may call it fear. Again, we might not have a name for it. And it's at that point, it's at that juncture that we know that we have to accept something. And we know very vividly that either we have to accept the kind of a death of ourselves and the way that we want to live, the things that we know to be intrinsically and authentically true to yourself, or we accept that death is you're not going to live true to yourself. You're going to continue to please others. You're going to continue to follow norms and constructs of tradition, of culture, or we're going to accept that there's a true self inside of all of this, and we're going to go back to that life. We're going to go back to finding what your happiness was, what your life should be. And that's where the tension begins. That's the point that causes myself and causes others to either, and I think of it metaphorically, we get to that one point in that tension where we can say, hey, I'm going to keep following and keep pleasing others, and I'm going to climb into this casket and basically for the rest of my life watch my own funeral because of fear. I'm not going to live true to myself. I'm going to die. I'm going to no longer feel and no longer pursue what is right for me in the hopes that I can please others, in the hopes that I can continue on this path to make other people happy. And if we choose that, then we're going to continue to become numb inside. We're going to continue to feel that pain of disassociation, of fear. And at some point, we may even see anger that we've made that choice. We're going to make that choice also because if we decide to pursue what is right for us. If we decide to continue to live in fear, well, we have to ask ourselves, will others be unhappy with us? Will we harm their dreams? Will we cause them pain? And that pain can be anyone. It can be a parent. It can be a partner. It can be a coach. It could be a child, children that you're caring for. Are we going to continue to live in this type of fake personhood, fake world that demands us to be someone else? But there's also the fear of how and who we are. Who are we really? And where do we go to find that self? And that's fear also. What do I do? What should I be doing really? What is really true to me in social settings? What's really true to me professionally? We're going to have to start to wonder, if you live authentically, if you no longer decide to live in that fear that so many survivors of sexual, physical, and psychological abuse, you're going to have to decide to live for yourself and make your own decisions. And that is fearful. For example, where do I like to travel? Where do I like to spend my time, my holidays or my summer? If we're living for ourselves because we've had to deal with trauma, because we've had to create a life and an existence that did not bring about any further harm, and making decisions based on what other people want. When you think about no longer living like that, no longer living for others, you have to start to ask yourself, what do I really want? That can cause fear, because the first thing is, I don't really know what I want. I've lived so long pleasing others. Now thinking about what is true and authentic to myself can bring about fear. You can ask yourself at this point, what if I become myself and show myself? Will this be disruptive to others? Will this cause confusion for your friends in your community, for your friend group? Will it cause confusion in your job? Now that you start to express yourself, your opinions, there's fear. So if you think about it, if we think about the juncture in this road, fear standing there, you're asking yourself at this point of tension, do I continue to live as others? Do I continue to not express myself? Do I continue to stay silent? There are two ways you can go. You can get on two different trains. Fear in itself, you think about fear as the conductor. Fear can be giving you two tickets. One ticket that's being handed out and that you can take is a train that leads to chronic pain, silence. It could feel like you're never really tasting, you're never really seeing, you're never really laughing. There's also, if fear is this conductor and asking you to decide at this point in your life, you can also take a ticket that will lead you to back to yourself. Going back to yourself, you think, may lead to some real joy, real deep felt enjoyment. Things, words such as living authentically, living in ecstasy, all of those things that we've heard about, and even those words and ideas of living abundantly. There's a disclaimer, though, if you think about whether you're going to take either ticket and which journey you're going to go down. On the disclaimer, if you take that choice and take that ticket as a survivor to continue to live for others and please others, you may look at the bottom of that ticket and say, look, here's a disclaimer. You stay on this current course, this current life, you won't really feel what's deep inside of you. But you'll have lots of company. You'll be in a familiar life of living for others, pleasing them. You'll be applauded for your self-denial, for being a good girl or a good boy, a good daughter, a good husband, wife, for being smart, for being good. You'll still get that. And that, there's comfort in that. That's a disclaimer. Living for others, living out a life that is not truly yours, does have some comforts. It's familiar. Now, the disclaimer at the bottom of that ticket, if you take the journey and decide to go on the path of finding your true self, what you were before or after, before the trauma, the disclaimer on that ticket, it's going to be clear. There's going to be fear waiting for you. It is the fear of the unknown. So, you know, these disclaimers and deciding about the decision which way to go, it can be hard. It can be hard if you take that ticket and the journey back to yourself. You're going to be going into the unknown. But to be fully transparent, the journey back to yourself and that disclaimer should also read, that moving away from living for others, from pleasing others as a survivor, you're going to have to enter into a process where you break down. And by breaking down, this is what I mean. You're going to have to break down systems, relationships, and structures in your life. I like to often refer for myself and in my practice, when even I'm analyzing different cases and trying to look for ways to counsel and advise, I often refer to a psychologist very well known. She has a lot of materials, books, Dr. Shefali. One of her groundbreaking books called Conscious Parenting examines the systems and structures that we as parents, adults, how we live and how we interact with children and the hierarchy that has been established across culture, across generations, and is still prevalent today. You'll find it in any structure where you have children and you have adults. And I encourage you to go directly to the source of this book, Conscious Parenting. I will put a link in the show notes. But in essence, if I could paraphrase, what Dr. Shefali speaks about is the hierarchy where children are at the bottom. Parents, adults, and other authority figures are at the top of the structure or the system. Children, therefore, in this hierarchy, are to be shaped. Adults give the children their opinion and tell them what to do. And in exchange, the children will be happy and they'll live a productive life. Now, should the child in this structure, in the tradition, should that child show any deviation, displeasure, or opinion, the adult will meet that child, that wayward child, so to speak, in this hierarchy with a reprimand or degrade the child, telling the child you have no opinion, either explicitly stating that or by the adult's actions. And there are even the resorting by the adult or authority figure to violence, to physical or bullying. And why is that? Why does that happen in this hierarchy, in this structure, and the system that we currently have in our interaction with children? Because of fear. The adult fears that a child that deviates from this hierarchy may meet some type of harm. So it's not always done intentionally by the authority figure or the adult. It's many times done unconsciously, and thus the name of the book, Conscious Parenting. The adult, the very system, is threatened by children who express themselves and have opinions. And that threat must be conquered. Under the current system that we have for our interaction with children, it's a rebellion, and that rebellion must be extinguished. This system is one that is fatal to the health of our entire way that we deal with each other and the way we deal with our children, because it models to the kids in every setting that you find children and you find this hierarchy. And we find it in our homes, we find it in our schools, we find it in church groups, youth groups, we find it where in competitive youth sports, wherever there are children, wherever we have unaware styles of dealing with children and an unaware system, you will find this hierarchy. And the children, we're modeling to them. When we show children that they do not have an opinion, we model that they have no agency, they have no opinion, they have no authority over their thoughts. And therefore, we show them that when they're hurt or when they suffer some type of discomfort, that they should not trust themselves, and instead they should remain silent. And that is the system of fear. That is the systematic fear that is built in and what we are seeking to conquer on the Legally Brief podcast and through our discussions. It's a system for raising children, for coaching children, for teaching children, for parenting children that we all have to become aware of and confront if we really want to impact and stop the violence and trauma that happens to girls, boys, men, and women. And specifically, if we want to stop the trauma that happens to athletes, youth athletes in competitive sports.
Thank you. During the podcast launch period, we have a perfect offer for our early supporters. Child USA is a pioneer in the movement to end child abuse in all forms among competitive sports, child marriage, negligent, physical, sexual, trafficking, child exploitation. Child USA is staffed by experts, scientists, and professionals from many disciplines, all dedicated to educate, provide research, data, and resources to end abuse of children. Child USA, in their wisdom and expertise, created a curated specialized library, so you do not need to blindly research Google or other search engines for answers, help, and support. For a very limited time, when you do three things, subscribe to the Legally Brief podcast and rate and review on iTunes, Spotify, or other platform. Legally Brief will select one listener each month to receive free access to Child USA's curated library. This is a valuable offer only offered on this podcast for a limited time. You must leave your email information so we can reach you and give you access to relevant, eye-opening guides to many of your most perplexing problems.
There's this notion that people say, and I've heard it. I remember when I was a young parent and thinking in pure frustration, there is no book, there's no blueprint for raising children. How can I know how to raise a child? Well, I know that that's a lie. There is a book. There is a blueprint for raising children. And it is based on systematic fear at the very foundation. When you have your child, there is a way. You're told timeouts, quiet the child down. Children are to be seen, not heard. Children really don't know what they want. That's the blueprint, and that's the book. The book teaches you to force children to adopt your values, adopt what you think, and use lots of coercion, threats, and allow the children to then become what you think they should be. Children grow up in that fear. And the book that we have that teaches us how to raise children also tells us that you have to keep the child that pushes back, that expresses any type of opinion about what they themselves think, need, or want, that that's a threat. That's based on fear. And there's the idea that the way that the adult says it should be is the only option. Now, of course, nothing I'm saying that's bringing some discussion and context around fear and the fear that survivors encounter has anything to do with allowing them to make decisions on their own that are not safe for their physical or mental well-being. What I am saying, though, is that there is fear deeply embedded in the systems, in the process, and the ways, and the hierarchy that we raise children. And when I say raise children, I also want to be expansive and include how we coach children, teach children, and interact with children, because this doesn't only apply to your own children. It applies to children that you interact with. And it is a system where we do not really accept that children have opinions and they are allowed to sit in those opinions. We, upon hearing a child's opinion, accept it, sit in it, and just let it sink in. Instead, fear is the bedrock of many of our institutions. Fear is both the lesson, we model it in the way that we interact with children, and it's also a punishment. And now, unfortunately, abusive authority figures rely heavily on fear. And that is because by the time that a child shows up in an environment outside of the home, an environment outside of maybe immediate family or immediate social structures, that child then shows up, say, in a school or in our gyms, camps, youth groups, in sports, there's been a normalization of fear. For example, such phrases as, do you do this or else, saying to a young person, you better be quiet. I'll tell you what you think. What do you have to complain about? Or you're being a crybaby. Grow up. What do you know? You're only fill in the blank, 5 years old, 10 years old. Now, I am the first to say, and I'm sure that my kids will agree, that I, in fact, have used many of those phrases, and I've used them in fear. I've struggled with them. I know that those phrases are used to weaponize. You weaponize those phrases when you're afraid as the person, say, in charge of a child. you want some type of compliance. Or it could be you're just plain frustrated. You're tired, but you still have to guide, parent, or interact with a child. But what I do know that it's not until we become aware of how we use our power, how we use our authority as adults, and until we become conscious, can we really strike to the heart of how fear dominates and is part of the system and the hierarchy of children, the adult and the child interaction. And it's not until we strike at that fear and become aware of it, can we really start to make any changes and get to the point where we have fewer survivors of sexual, physical, and emotional trauma. We have to work in our corner of the world. We have to stop when a child pushes back, when a child expresses the opinion of how they feel, of something they may not want to do. We have to pause before and after the child speaks so that we don't act out of our instinctual fear.
Are you a law firm or an attorney who sees the value of having a child sexual practice in your area, but you understand the cost and resources to run a department can be expensive? Your answer? Outside Counsel Plan. For the cost of one-third of your hourly rates, you can have access to the training, client development, and trial skills of the Law Office of Judy Saunders. The Outside Counsel Plan provides unlimited monthly consults, skilled, compassionate interview assistance with children as young as 4 years old. Signature services such as EBT, lead or co-counsel at hearings and trial also provided at value-driven rates.
If we want to live in neighborhoods, in towns, in cities where children, teenagers, and even adults stand in their own true selves, where they can say, where they can stop, where they can feel or express when they do not feel safe, and they can talk about either before a trauma happens or after a trauma happens, they can speak freely about the physical, emotional, or sexual harm. We have to create a place where fear is no longer part of our systems and our institutions. The system, the book, or the blueprint that we have all been using to interact with and raise children has been built on a hierarchy whose foundation is fear. And we have used that book to interact with children in a flawed, unsustainable way, where children are less than adults, where adults turn out to be the rulers that are more than or greater than children, where we believe intrinsically that children have no real ideas, opinions, or ability to decide their own fate, to decide the way they feel, where adults are given the last word. In the small part of your world, we have to break down and rebuild that system. And we can do that with this one small step. And I'm going to take this challenge myself. When a child that I interact with, and that could be in a classroom, in the home, in the family, in your gym, if you're a coach, on the field, expresses a thought or an idea, we have to stop, turn around, and look at that child, full gaze, and really hear. Take a moment before you respond, or maybe don't respond at all. Instead, say, I'll get back to you, let me think about that. But let that child know. Let that young athlete know that you've considered their opinion and that opinion has value. Or here's another way to challenge that, the notion that we can rebuild this system and avoid future harm, sexual, physical, or emotional harm to children. When you interact, maybe one of your young athletes or a child that you interact with raises their voice, disagrees, or is unpleasant, stop. Do not default to your immediate response or your reaction to crush a rebellion. Calm your inner dictator. And as I say that, I say it very much to myself. Calm your inner dictator. We have been taught as adults that we are at the top of the food chain in our interaction with children. Instead, let the child voice that opinion. And if we need to, depending on where you are, revisit. Let the child know, we'll come back to this. We'll revisit it. And you only revisit it when you are able to listen without the goal and the purpose of punishment, or you do not have the goal to show the child ultimately that they are wrong and you are right. My goal on this podcast this month is to examine and talk about fear, anger, and disassociation. This month, we want to do that. I want to look at the role that fear plays in sexual, physical, and psychological abuse. I invite you to leave your comments about ways that you've seen fear show up, if either in your journey, if you notice that fear drives your decisions or your interactions with children. And if anything that I've said or anything resonates with you over the course of this show, please be sure to share it with someone. Share it with a friend, a family member, or a partner. We're going to come back and we're going to do our final part in this series during the month of October, the Halloween month, where fear is celebrated. And we're going to discuss how survivors who have had to fight or have a tendency to be a fighter to survive, and how that tendency to fight can lead to disassociation, which stands for the last letter in the acronym that I've coined, FAD, fear, anger, and disassociation. And we're going to discuss how that disassociation, what role that plays in survivors of sexual and physical and emotional abuse, and how that impacts their healing. And I'll leave you with this thought, this poem on children, on our hierarchy, and how we deal with and break down and are trying to rebuild this system, the process, and how we deal with children. It's the poem by Khalil Gibran on children, where he said, "Your children are not your children. They are the sons and daughters of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but not from you. And though they are with you, yet they belong not to you. You may give them your love, but not your thoughts, for they have their own thoughts." Thank you again for sharing a moment with me on the Legally Brief podcast. I look forward to speaking with you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Legally Brief podcast. Remember to join Judy and fellow listeners at the Legally Brief Facebook group. Contact Judy at judy@jsaunderslawfirm.com. Remember, there is no keener revelation of a society's soul than the way it treats its children.
All information and content in this podcast is provided for entertainment purposes only. Nothing in this podcast shall constitute legal advice and shall not create an attorney-client relationship. This information is general and may not be applicable to your particular circumstances. You should review your particular circumstances with an attorney. All liability with respect to actions taken or not taken based on the contents of this podcast is hereby expressly disclaimed.